Current State on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. 137 years ago, MSU botany professor William J. Beale filled 20 bottles with seeds from common plants and then covered them with sandy soil. Then he buried them all in a secret spot on campus. That was the beginning of what would become the world's longest-running scientific experiment. And Current State's April Van Buren talked to the man who's in charge of the experiment today. Did you get to see any of these secret bottles?
Well, they only dig one of them up every 20 years, so I'll have to wait another 4 years before joining the super secret Beale Bottle Society, which is what I imagine they call it.
Does Dan Brown know about this?
That's my question. He must. It's coming out next spring. No. I did get to speak with Dr. Frank Tolusky, who will be in charge of digging up that bottle in 2020. And I met him at the Beaumont Greenhouse to talk about the world's longest-running experiment and the man behind it. Frank told me that Dr. Beale first started working on what would become the W.J. Beale Botanical Garden all the way back in 1872.
He actually began doing experiments in what we call Sleepy Hollow today. That's a little bit of a depression that's just between Beaumont Tower and the Music Building up in the Oval. And that's actually where our turf grass studies got their first start. So he started studying grasses and growing material, and that's the birthplace of the Beale Botanical Garden. By 1878, he had actually more formalized the garden into the area that we traditionally know, recognize as the Beale Garden, down around the pond and the Beale Garden Shed and that whole area. And his whole idea was to have the garden be an outdoor laboratory, a living laboratory, where students could come and study plants, observe plants, and learn more about plants than they would from a textbook. The exciting thing about Professor Beale at that time in our history is, in terms of pedagogy, in terms of teaching, Professor Beale became very important in the sense of moving away from the traditional lecture hall style lecturing and moving more into the laboratory setting. And at that time, the microscope was becoming a less expensive instrument. So in a lot of ways, for Professor Beale, the microscope was very much the iPad, the laptop, some sort of a computing device that we have today for students. It was once a very expensive and accessible technology. And as technology and industrialization improved, these technologies became more available for the average person. So with microscopes and with a garden with fresh plant material, Professor Beale was really able to advance knowledge of his students.
Can you tell me a little bit about how this experiment, which has become the longest running experiment in the world, came about? When did he first decide to do this experiment?
Well, being at Michigan State being the first agricultural college, the first land grant school, Professor Beale was very interested in interacting with farmers. And they had the farmer institutes, and so the professors from Michigan State would go out and meet with farmers on a regular basis and listen to them and listen to their concerns and how can we help you and how can you help us. In a day and age when you didn't have herbicides and the only way to really cultivate and remove weeds from your field was to literally go out there and cultivate by hand. A long row to hoe, as I always like to say, is where that term came from. But if you went out there year after year after year and you pulled these weeds and you hoed these weeds and they just kept coming back, when are we going to see the end of these weeds? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of weed control? And so that was, I think, for Professor Beale, a very interesting question. And so by selecting these different seeds that he did, 23 different species of seeds, and putting them into a sandy soil mix and filling them into the bottles that he had, 20 bottles, and burying them in the ground, he was going to open up a bottle every 5 years and see what germinated. Now, how long do these seeds last? We don't know. That was an unknown question at the time. And so that's basically how this experiment began to get started.
He obviously dug up some of these bottles in his lifetime. What were some of the first results that he found from this experiment?
So the first experiment, the first couple of times he opened up his bottles, 1885, 1890, 1895, 1900, and on into 1910, he saw that there was quite a few things that would germinate, and there would be a tapering off, that some species would begin to show lower and lower germination rates and eventually disappear and not germinate anymore. But Verbascum blattaria, the moth mullein, is the genus Verbascum, has the most consistent germinations, germinated every single time the experiment's done. And when we opened the bottle in 2000, we had over 50% germination.
And so I'm wondering, because this experiment initially started out as farmers saying, when can I get rid of these? But obviously farming has changed a lot since the late 19th century. We have, you know, farmers have plenty of herbicides to choose from now to deal with weeds. How has the sort of the purpose of the experiment changed in the past over 120 years?
Well, one of the things that's become very interesting with regard to this experiment is what does it mean in terms of basic plant physiology? What is the dynamic of plants in terms of their ability to remain dormant for long periods of time? How does that reflect on our desire and our ability to store seeds? The U.S. Department of Agriculture here in the United States and the agriculture departments in many other countries have laboratories that save seeds and keep them stored as a bank, a seed bank. These are very important ways of maintaining our biodiversity, our plant biodiversity, into the future. But I think one of the really developing and very important aspects of the work is related to conservation biology, and particularly restoration ecology. And what we mean there is when we look at a parcel of land, an old farm field, a forest plot, if you go into Baker Woodlot, okay, you come out here in some of the farm fields, if you take out the soil from that area and you expose it to light, you'll see all kinds of plants germinate. And a lot of them will be weedy plants, especially from the farm fields. But we actually had a case, I had a phone call back in 2001, when a farmer called me up from southwest corner of Michigan, where we have a little bit of the remnant prairie that came in, and that was some of the very first land to be cultivated, turned into farmland. And he had told me a story that that year he had excavated for a pond, and they took the spoils, the soil that was from that farm, and spread it out. And he said all of a sudden prairie plants started germinating. But his family had been farming that piece of land for over 100 plus years, and yet those prairie plants were still viable. And so from a standpoint of what is the original genetic population that would have been in that area, which now is maybe extirpated, in other words, it's locally extinct for those species, we can actually go back and look at some of these dormant seeds and recover some of that information. And then for restoration ecology, is it more important, in some cases it would be, to use the local genotypes, the local genetic material? So we now know that we can actually go into these areas and start doing some prospecting for seeds that may have been dormant for 100, 200 or more years.
The first bottle that you dug up was in 2000, right?
Correct.
What was that like? What was it like to get your hands on that bottle?
It was very exciting. I mean, it was very interesting because so many of students of plant physiology learn about these studies because of the importance to understanding dormancy in plants and longevity of seeds. And in 1980, when Dr. Bandersky and Dr. Kivalon excavated the 100th year, I was a graduate student down in Ohio and learned about the study. Did I ever think that I'd be opening up the next bottle? No clue. And so 20 years later, here I am at Michigan State and doing the excavation with Dr. Jan Zeevaart. And it was just a very exciting time. I think the most exciting part, it was neat seeing the bottles in the soil and seeing where they were buried and seeing them actually there and pulling one of the bottles out. But for me, I think the anticipation of knowing or trying to see what would germinate. And so going down to the growth chamber in the Department of Plant Biology and opening up that little door and looking, is anybody waking? Well, who's awakened from their slumber? Who's our Rip Van Winkle for the day? And when we began to see little seeds begin to germinate, it was just so exciting. Wow, here it is 120 years later, and they're still going. So it was a lot of fun. I think that was, the really fun part of the experiment. Science is fun. That's why we do it.
Frank Teluski is a professor of plant biology and also the curator for the William J. Beale Botanical Gardens here at MSU. And we are talking about the longest running experiment in the world, which happens to be right here on Michigan State's campus. So when will the last bottle be excavated then?
Well, I guess it depends. At right now, at 5-year intervals, we have 5 more bottles. So that'll be, 2120? Did my math right? 2100?
Mm-hmm. And they're in 20-year intervals now.
And 20-year intervals, right. So unless we decide to extend the experiment or not, I think that's probably when the experiment will terminate. There's been a lot of suggestions and a lot of interest in setting up another experiment, and so we may be considering doing that. And one of the things I think would be very interesting would be to look at using maybe some of our prairie species, some of our native species, but also to use some of our invasive species. I mean, we think so much about garlic mustard or purple loosestrife, and some of the other plants that are very weedy here in Michigan and causing some problems for our natural areas. It would be very interesting to know how long those would last as well.
I'm wondering what the challenges are of continuing a study for over 130 years. There must be some challenges to keeping something going that long.
I think the biggest challenge is probably two of them. One is maintaining continuity and interest. This experiment, as it gets older and older, I think it gets more and more interesting to the public. You know, here we are 4 years away from the excavation of the next bottle, and you know, people are showing an interest in it again, like yourself, and bringing it up to the general attention of the public as well as the scientific community. So that's a good thing. Otherwise, if we forgot about it and we didn't pass the legacy on to the next generation, it would be too easy to forget about. The other aspect is making sure that the location of the experiment remain fairly secret, and that nobody does any construction work or disturbance, plant a tree someplace, and what was that? Again, protecting it in that sense, working with our infrastructure planning facilities group, so that they know where the people who need to know where those bottles are and avoid them during any kind of effort and construction work.
And you did mention this is a pretty secretive process. You don't just go out in broad daylight to dig these up when you do it. Can you describe why you got to keep this under wraps?
Well, there's two reasons. One is actually a scientific reason, and the other is a security issue. We don't want to draw a lot of attention while we're there, excavating a bottle. But the other thing is that you have to understand that the physiology of these seeds is that light, sunlight, daylight, is a very key trigger, and so would be artificial light if it was intense enough to trigger the germination. And so the whole thing that the seed understands, if you will, use that term loosely, is that when they are exposed to the sunlight, when you dig the soil up, when you plow a field, and those seeds come to the surface and they perceive the sunlight, then they know it's time to germinate. But as long as they're in a dark place, then they're not going to germinate. And if we dug the bottles up during the daytime, and there was any seeds close to the tops of the bottles, in the other bottles, we could trigger those seeds to germinate and then artificially lower the germination percent, the germination rate in those bottles because of that error. So we really tried to use do this at very low light levels for scientific reasons, and also we don't want to have a big party out there.
What has been your favorite part of being part of this 130-year legacy so far?
One of the things that I really like is the excitement that it gets students and the general public, and it gets people excited about plants, and it gets people excited about science. And as the curator of the botanical garden, that's the mission of the garden. We've tried to make what we refer to as that people-plant connection, that people understand that plants are not just important to us in terms of food and oxygen and medicines and clothing and all of the things that we derive from plants, but also that this is an exciting and interesting field of endeavor, and to get people excited about everything from the plants in their garden to the plants that are in the grocery store to the plants that are out in the forests and fields, and why we need to protect species and protect biodiversity.
Frank Tolusky is a professor of plant biology and the curator for the W.J. Beal Botanical Garden at MSU. We've been talking about the world's longest running experiment, which is happening right here at MSU. Frank, thank you for talking to me today, and good luck in 2020.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and hopefully we can chat about this in 4 years, 5 years.
For Current State, this is April Van Buren.
Oh, we unveil it live on Current State. That's what we should aim for. This segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership.